It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have 3 square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation. It is Thanksgiving Day. It is one of my most favorite holidays of the whole year, getting together with family and friends and just being grateful for all the blessings that we have. And so wishing each of you a very blessed Thanksgiving as you are preparing today. We've got a great show planned for you today. In segments 2, 3, and 4, we will be talking with Bill Federer. He is really a historian. He's an expert on the American founding. And we will be talking about Thanksgiving and actually how the pilgrims came out of a very tumultuous time in Europe to get to America and the first Thanksgiving feast. So it promises to be a really great conversation. And as you know, each and every day we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And that really resonates with people out there. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And if something is a great idea, you should not have to force people to do it. It is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. And we continue to see in Colorado, we're kind of like California wannabes, where we're seeing socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, communications. And we need to put a stop to this. You know, all of these things are things that we can be grateful for that make our lives better. And what I see as we look at these policymakers is they believe that everything is a finite pie, that there is only so much of something. But what we realize is with man's creativity and ingenuity, easy for me to say, using our brains, we can actually make the pie bigger and bigger and bigger. And so that's really the question on the table is, do we believe in the creativity and innovation of mankind, or do we think that we're just stuck right here? Steve, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, my ears went up when you said we're California wannabes. And I think, okay, is that really true? And it is. I mean, we see it unfolding before us ever since January of this year. And we all know what happened there, what I'm referring to. But the question is why? Just watch the news. There is nothing in California that is working for them. So why would you want to be a California wannabe unless there's some other motivation?
And what there is, there's a real disdain for the middle class. There's a disdain for everyday hardworking people to be able to go out and pursue their American dream and take care of their families without having to rely on government assistance. Or on the other hand, without working with the favored regarding how to get around rules and regulations. And there is a disdain for everyday hardworking people. I can't explain it. I don't understand it. But when Donald Trump looks into the camera and says, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you, he's talking about this broad middle class, which is unique to the American idea, Steve.
I wish there were more people who understood what it is he's saying. So many who will hear those words are the same group who, you know, will openly say, well, I despise that man. I say, put your despising of him aside. Think about what he just said. They're coming after you.
Well, and that is why there's this continual drumbeat, this narrative to try to tear him down because he has gotten to Washington. I don't think he's perfect, but man, he is really stirring things up regarding all these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties who have been embedded there and who are making their living not by creating something of value, but by using the system to enrich themselves. And so I'm very grateful today on Thanksgiving Day for what President Trump is doing for America, and I will be praying for him today as well.
Yes, it's easy to get worked up here. Let's go back to the laid-back intro that we'd like to do for Thanksgiving Day. I think of my earliest memories are wrapped around this day, traveling, well, either it's right there at our home or traveling to a nearby close relative. But the, you know, all the things that go with it, having to sit at the kids' table and all those things that go with it. But great memories.
I remember at big family that we would all circle up and we'd have a prayer. And again, there was the kids' table, which was out in my grandmother's utility room. She had, you know, the washer was all cleaned off. Everything was totally clean, but the kids' room was out in the utility room, which was kind of nice because then the adults couldn't see what we were doing.
It's always a challenge that I think back to people's creativity to see where that kids' room or kids' table ended up.
That's for sure. So, you know, as we look at this day, though, there is a lot to be thankful for. Thank you to you, Steve, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for your support, your good work. Thank you to each of you listeners out there. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence. I'm grateful for you. And take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. And be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. That is spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Podcasts of these shows are available there at kimmunson.com. Our quote for today is from W.T. Purkhizer. He was a preacher, a scholar, and author in the Church of the Nazarene. Among his other accomplishments, Purkhizer authored a book entitled The Gifts of the Spirit, and he lived from 1910 to 1992. And he said, God does not offer us a way out of the testings of life. He offers us a way through, and that makes all the difference. Powerful, Steve.
It is, because I think it'll fall. If I understand where our guest this morning is going to go, it speaks right to it.
Absolutely. The pilgrims, what they went through, 500 miles from where they thought they were going to land, a terrible winter. So most definitely they powered through it.
Well, let's talk about Bill just a little bit behind his back.
Bill Federer?
Bill Federer, yeah. He has been on in the different shows that I've had my hands on here at KLZ. We've had him on many times, and then you have picked up right where we left off with another show host. He's got to be one of the most fascinating guys to talk to because his command of history, especially early American history, is just unparalleled. I don't know anybody else who could match up with Bill Federer.
And we need to be talking about this. That is one of the reasons why we do these little quotes, why we do these shows on these special occasions, is so that we can start to learn our history because our kids are no longer learning that history, Steve.
Well, I think you made the point in another show recently about the children in France, the children in Europe, well, non-Nazi.
Well, in Normandy.
Normandy. In and around Normandy are being taught what happened in 1944 and 1945.
Yeah.
And in American schools, they're not. Now, why would that be?
And, you know, I talked to a friend of mine who had, I'm the product of a great classical liberal public education. But we've seen education start to shut down some voices and raise up others. And sometimes the things that they're shutting down and raising up, that they're raising up, are not necessarily true. And she said, you know, Kim, I feel like I've been robbed because she's learning all these things, listens to the show regularly, and she feels like she's been robbed. And I think a lot of people will feel that because education is tapping down voices and augmenting some things that to me sometimes don't make much sense at all.
Well, in that same vein, and maybe it's a plug for our show here, recently at an event, a social event with church and a small group, but a gentleman who's new to the show and has been started listening in the last 3 to 4 weeks, but when it came to Proposition CC, he openly admits he had no idea what was going on there, what it was all about, until he listened to the Kim Munson Show.
Ah, all right. And we continued to hit that because PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties wanted to ask to keep your Tabor tax refunds forever. We can be very grateful that the people of Colorado said no. So you know what? I've got three jokes for you, Steve. Are you ready for these?
They're probably going to be turkeys, aren't they?
It might be.
Okay.
My family told me to stop telling Thanksgiving jokes, but I told them I couldn't just quit cold turkey.
Okay, I got that right.
Okay. A lady was picking through the frozen turkeys at the grocery store for Thanksgiving Day, but she couldn't find one big enough for her family. She turned to the stock boy and asked, "Do these turkeys get any bigger?" He says, "No, ma'am, they're dead."
Okay.
Okay. And lastly, what do you call a turkey on the day after Thanksgiving?
Casserole, no.
Lucky.
Lucky, okay.
Ha ha. Okay, Steve, we've got just a couple of minutes here. You kind of hit on some traditions for Thanksgiving. I remember, you know, getting into the car, heading to the grandparents. You know, typically my mother, one of the things she was really good at is she would make the hot rolls. You know, the house would smell so good. I couldn't wait to eat those. I just loved Thanksgiving.
Well, again, the memories come in all shapes and sizes, dating back to, you know, your youngest memories, which we've already touched on, and then we make more modern ones. I think of a couple times in the last 7 or 8 years, we've gathered the group, the Colorado group, in Estes Park at the YMCA of the Rockies. In, you know, they had these awesome cabins, and if we pull the whole group together and there's 25 people, guess what? We can sleep them all. And the two times we have done it, actually we've done it 3 times now that I think about it.
For Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Cool. You know, everybody gets there on Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon, and obviously then there's the big day on Thursday, and we've even tried to tie it into some of the events that happen in Estes Park as it goes into the weekend.
Oh, so going into the holidays, yeah, getting ready for Christmas.
They do all kinds of cool things up there, like you would expect out of a mountain town, but just a lot of fun, and I know we've done a great job of building memories in some of the younger ones who are still only in their teens.
Oh, that is so awesome. So hope you are creating traditions with your family out there as well. And we are going to be talking with Bill Federer regarding the Pilgrims. We're talking about how treacherous it was in the 15th century in Europe and just how it was that the Pilgrims came to North America. So stay tuned. This is a very important show. This is Kim Munson, and we will be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
I've got plenty to be thankful for.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Hope you're having a wonderful day with friends and family. It's a day to stop and say thank you. You can't be envious when you're saying thank you. And I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Bill Federer. He is a best-selling author, speaker, and he's host of the American Minute that you can hear right here on KLZ 560. But we want to talk about the history of America, the history of the Pilgrims. And Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
Jim, great to be with you.
You have written a book. It's a long title, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. This is quite a story. So why don't we start at how treacherous was it out there in the 16th century?
Well, you had the Muslim Sultan surrounding Vienna, Austria, with 100,000 soldiers. And Suleiman the Magnificent And he controlled the entire Mediterranean and North Africa and the Middle East. And then you had the Reformation start in 1517 with Martin Luther. And then you had the King of Spain is also the Holy Roman Empire emperor, which means he's tasked with an additional responsibility of protecting Christendom. And so all the kings of Europe would take turns being the Holy Roman Emperor, and so this time it was the King of Spain's turn. So Charles V is the most powerful guy on the planet. His empire controlled all the New World. So he was taking the gold from the New World to fit out his navy and army to stop the Muslims from taking over Europe. And some famous battles. You have the Battle of Cyprus, Famagusta, Cyprus, where the Muslims kill all 10,000 Christians that surrendered. And then in 1565, you have Malta. And it was this little fortified island just south of Sicily. And the Muslims wanted it because if they got that, they could get Italy, they could get Europe. And there's only 1,000 knights of Malta. And the 40,000 of the Sultan's navy surround it, and they are pounding away with cannons. The knights have a 70-year-old leader named Jean Lavalette. And he gets these young men together and says, you vowed to give your life for Christ when you join this order. Guess what? You're going to have to give it now because we're not getting any reinforcements. And so these guys fight. And finally, after months, the Muslims leave on September 11th, 1565, the first major defeat of the Muslims on sea. And then you have the great big battle of Lepanto. So it's the largest battle ever on the Mediterranean Sea. 230 Muslim ships powered by 15,000 Christian slaves under the deck rowing the Muslim ships to attack the Christians. And so the Pope, Pius V, he twists every arm to get these kings of Europe to team up. It's called the Holy League to fight the Muslims at the Battle of Lepanto. The only way they would is if Charles V's son leads them. But he's 24 years old, but he's fought since he was a kid. He was real courageous. And so here he is, this 24-year-old guy is leading the charge to save Europe. Well, the day of the battle, the wind is against the Holy League, and the Sultan's navy has the wind at its back. It's barreling in. The admirals say, this doesn't look good. They go to the young 24-year-old Don John and say, hey, you know, we can always fight another day. He goes, no. We get them on deck. They pray. While they're praying, the wind changes 180 degrees. The Muslim sails go limp. They're just floundering. And the Holy League sails fill up, and they smash in together, and they capture or kill 200 of the 230 Muslim ships. It breaks the back of the Ottoman Navy. It saves Europe. And so after this victory, Spain could have gone around the entire Mediterranean with their navy and freed up every city from Muslim control. But instead, Spain decided to send its armada to smash the Reformation in England and in Holland. And so the Iron Duke of Alba breaks off fighting the Muslims and decides to march into Holland. And he massacres people in Antwerp, Holland, and all these places. And then the armada is heading toward England. The Dutch and the English team up together. They lure the big Spanish ships to shallow areas, and they get stuck on sandbars. Have a hurricane blow up, and then, Sir Francis Drake lights a bunch of ships on fire at nighttime and floats them to where the Spanish ships are, and they have to cut anchor. And anyway, the hurricane hits, and it smashes the Spanish armada. And this saves England, saves Holland. And after this, no one's as afraid of Spain as they used to be. And so Spain had a monopoly on the New World since Columbus for 100 years. Everything was Spanish. But then once their armada sunk, it became like an Oklahoma land rush. All these other countries like, let's stake a claim. So you got France settling New France, which is Canada. Nova Scotia means New Scotland. You have the Dutch settling New Amsterdam, which, of course, became New York. You have the Swedes settling New Sweden, which eventually became Delaware and New Jersey. And then you have the English settling New England and Virginia. Another thing that happened in the 16th century, which is the 1500s, is companies. You think companies, right? Well, during the Middle Ages, there was a sin called usury, where it was a sin to pay or receive interest. And so there were guilds, which were, you know, groups of shoemakers, and they had 1,000 rules on how to open up a shop. They had rich people, but there were no companies. So if you wanted to do something big, like sail around the world looking for spices, you had to hit up a rich guy or a king. And like, you know, Columbus did with the king or queen. And so you had Sir Walter Raleigh. He's a rich guy. He spends 30,000 pounds sterling to try to settle the Roanoke colony in Virginia in 1584. But when the Spanish Armada heads toward England, the colony is neglected for several years. When he finally goes back, it's abandoned. It's called the Lost Colony. And they couldn't find out where anybody went. They figured, well, maybe they went and, you know, joined the local Indian tribe, you know, but nobody ever knew. And so this was a loser. No other rich guys wanted to put any money out to try to settle the New World. And so a group of these rich guys formed something called the Virginia Company. And the company was a good deal for the king. What did he do? He said, look, I'm not going to give you any money. You take all the risk. You spend all the money. But I get a percentage of what you bring back into England, right? Because if you make money, you got to spend it somewhere. And so it was a win-win for the king. And so these guys would risk their money. Their first English company, believe it or not, they tried to go north of Russia to try to get over to China. The boats got caught in the ice and froze to death. And then one of them, some dog sleds, took them to Ivan the Terrible, the Tsar of Russia, and they changed it to the Muscovy Company and didn't really make any money. The Dutch started a company, and it was the Dutch East India Company. And this was the richest company of any of them for the next 200 years. And the difference is, England's company was a bunch of rich guys. It was the Company of Merchant Adventurers. Well, in Holland, and Holland goes by three names, Holland, the Dutch, and the Netherlands. But in Holland, anybody could invest money in a boat going to Indonesia. When it came back filled full of spices, everybody got paid a profit. And if you wanted to sell your interest in the boat while it was at sea, you would go down to something they call the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. And then if your boat sank, well, that's when the Dutch invented insurance companies. Uh-huh. And so the Dutch settled the colony called New Amsterdam, and they traded their shares of stock along the wall of the fort. And the British took over New Amsterdam in 1664 and turned it into New York. Well, it became Wall Street, or the New York Stock Exchange.
Uh-huh.
It was where common people could invest money in big endeavors, and they could participate in the profits. It was a way to accumulate capital without hitting up a rich guy. And
everyday people then had an opportunity to start to create wealth as well, right?
Yes, yes. And so it was this unlocking of finances that caused Europe to, you know, advance, and eventually, you know, turned into the Industrial Revolution and so forth. But we focus on Virginia. So Sir Walter Raleigh lost all that money, and then you have a Virginia company gets formed, and a bunch of guys put money together, and that is how Virginia got started. It was a company, and it went bankrupt. They were losing people every year, Indian attacks, malaria. You know, one winter, they started off with 500 people. By the next spring, there's only 50.
Wow.
They were going to torch the fort and leave. But then Lord Delaware, you know, Delaware shows up with another ship, and he orders everybody back into the fort. And they finally scrape together and get it to go. So this is sort of the setting of the world. Now, William Shakespeare is writing plays over in England. And then you have the Puritans, and that's a whole nother chapter. One other thing about the Virginia colony, they saw Indians who were really healthy smoking tobacco. And for some reason, they put two and two together, and they thought they're healthy. They smoke tobacco. Tobacco makes you healthy.
Aha.
And so this started a health craze in England where everybody wanted to smoke tobacco. And so this became the cash crop for Virginia. And now the original tobacco was not very tasty, but one of the second or third ships to Jamestown gets shipwrecked on Bermuda in a hurricane. And William Shakespeare writes a play about it. It's called The Tempest. And
let's stop right there, Bill Federer. Let's go to break. This is Thanksgiving Day, and we're talking about really the founding of America. And so let's go to break. We'll be right back with Bill Federer. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. And we have on the line with us Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. That's 303-694-1600. Hey, Jason, what's a great Thanksgiving story that you have?
You know, we kind of have a neat tradition for Thanksgiving. My wife, before dinner, she'll put maybe two or three unpopped popcorn kernels by each person's plate. And then during dinner, each person has to pick up a kernel and talk about something they're thankful for the year. So, of course, the kids are always hoping to just get one kernel so they don't have to say much of anything. But it's a neat thing, you know. It gives you a chance with your family to maybe say some things that you haven't had a chance to. And, yeah, it could be a little bit awkward sometimes to come out and say nice things about another family member or something that you're very, very thankful for. And, I think it's a great conversation starter. And instead of arguing at Thanksgiving, this gives you a chance to say something nice. So it's kind of a neat tradition we've always done.
And how does she decide who gets how many kernels?
Well, the people that she's probably mad at get more kernels.
Well, this Thanksgiving Day, there's a lot to be grateful for and gratitude. If you're grateful for something, you can't be hateful. So Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, thank you so much. We wish you and yours a very happy day.
Right back at you.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at kimmunson, MONSON.com.
We've come to the time in the season when family and friends gather near to offer a prayer of thanksgiving for blessings we've known through the year.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and wishing you a very blessed Thanksgiving. And when you are being grateful about things, you can't be envious about things. So America was really founded with a lot of gratitude and thanksgiving. It was tough out there, wasn't it, Bill, as the country was being founded? We had talked just a little bit about the Virginia Colony or the Virginia Company. And also, before we went to break, you mentioned William Shakespeare and a ship that was wrecked on Bermuda, and he did a play about it, The Tempest. Take it from there, Bill Fetter.
Right. So the situation in England is, you know, William Shakespeare was writing plays. Now, it was King Henry VIII that started the Reformation in England. And then the Puritans come along, and they were really strict. They outlawed Christmas. They thought it was too worldly, and they made it a rule that it was wrong to use God's name in a play, that that was considered disrespectful, like taking God's name in vain. And so they actually got this pushed through, and so William Shakespeare could no longer mention God in his plays.
Wow.
And so that's when he began to write these mystical, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream and little elves and nymphs and all these other things, you know. And but eventually William Shakespeare, the Puritans took over England in the 1600s, and they chopped off the king's head, Charles I, and the Puritans for 15 years ruled, and that's when William Shakespeare's theater was burned down. It was not rebuilt until like 1980 as a tourist attraction. Though the Puritans were really, really strict. Well, what was the situation religiously? Now, this is probably the most important, is you had Christianity for three centuries in the Roman Empire is persecuted, and the Christians are thrown to the lions, 10 major persecutions. And then Constantine stops the persecution, and then the whole Roman Empire eventually becomes Christian. And then you have Attila the Hun attacking, and then you have the Muslims attacking. And you have the Vikings attacking, and then you have a second wave of Muslims. And so they're called the Turks. They conquer into what is today Turkey, but back then it used to be the Byzantine Christian Empire. So all seven churches that are mentioned in the book of Revelation are wiped out by Muslim Turks. The cities that New Testament letters are written to, Ephesus, Colossae, Galatia, Philippi, Corinth, all those cities were wiped out by Muslim Turks. When this is happening, the Greek Christians beg the West for help. Now, the Greeks thought they were the true Christians because they spoke Greek, the language of the New Testament. Their land was where John spoke and Paul spoke. They viewed the Catholic Latin West as the church split. And so as the Muslims are invading Greece and destroying churches, the Greeks have to humble themselves and beg the church split for help. And they send help. It's called the what? The Crusades.
Uh-huh. Right?
And so the big thing happens with St. Nicholas. Now, St. Nicholas is the most popular Greek saint. There's more Greek Orthodox churches named after Nicholas than anybody else. And he lived during Roman times, gave to the poor, so these Greeks would leave presents for each other on the anniversary of his death. Just a Greek thing. But when the Muslims invaded, so St. Nicholas is to Greeks what St. Peter is to Catholics, what St. Patrick is to the Irish. That's how important St. And so in the year 1087, as the Muslims are invading Greece and destroying churches, the Greeks moved the bones of their most famous saint to Italy. And the Pope honors them, builds a church in a little town called Bari, B-A-R-I, and his remains are still there to this day. This introduces all the gift-giving to Western Europe, right? And it begins to spread. And, I did a whole book on the history of Christmas traditions and so forth. As the Muslims are invading, they finally conquered Constantinople in 1453. And why is this important? Constantinople is the biggest city in Europe, where the Black Sea empties into the Mediterranean, where East and West meet. And so the China Silk Road ends there, all the spice trade. And when Constantinople falls in 1453, the Western Europeans begin to look for an alternative route to get to India and China. So in 1492, Columbus set sail. He thinks he made it to India. He names the people he meets the Indians. So you think of it, Columbus would have never set sail had it not been for Islamic jihad cutting off the land routes. And Columbus thought he made it to India, so he names the people he meets Indians, and the name sticks. Think of it, we never would have called Native Americans Indians had it not been for Islamic jihad, because the Muslims cut off the land routes to Indian China 40 years earlier. And so then you got the Muslims invading into Eastern Europe and then finally surrounding Vienna, Austria. And so you have this double dilemma where the Reformation starts in 1517 with Martin Luther. In 1529, 100,000 Muslims surrounding Vienna. The Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V, says, man, I got problems on the inside, Reformation, problems on the outside, this Islamic attack. He decides to do something unprecedented. He makes a deal with the Protestants. It's called the Peace of Augsburg of 1555. It's the first treaty ever to recognize Protestants. And in this treaty is a little Latin phrase that had enormous repercussions. The phrase was, cuius regio, ius religio, which means, whose is the reign, his is the religion. In other words, look, Protestant king, believe whatever you want in your kingdom. Let's just work together against these Muslims who are invading Europe, because they sort of want to kill us all. And it stops the invasion. But in the next century, different kings decide to believe different things.
Okay.
And England is Anglican, Scotland is Presbyterian, Holland's Dutch Reformed. Then starts these religious wars and people mass migrating from one country to another.
Okay, Bill, I want to go back. Just, you know, one of the things that we have heard over the last 10 years or so here in America is that about the Crusades and just how brutal the Crusades were. And they used that to bash Christianity. What would you say to people when they, you know, bring that issue up?
Well, the Crusades saved Europe. In other words, the Muslims conquered Spain in 10 years, right? They crossed the Strait of Gibraltar in the year 711. By 732, they're at the gates of Paris. And the Europeans were fighting on foot with heavy metal swords. Muslim crusaders were on Arabian horses with stirrups and scimitar swords. And you can't outrun a horse, right? And so this was like F-16s on a battlefield. There's battles where the Muslim cavalry would come and kill every single Frank, every single Frenchman. And so they were unstoppable, and they carried away over a million into slavery. And it was lightning fast. And then when they were coming around the other side, these sultans are invading into Eastern Europe, Romania, Wallachia, Moldova, Bulgaria, Hungary, Poland. They're just and so the Crusades basically put the Muslim world on the defensive for two centuries. And it created Europe. I think, what do you mean it created Europe? Europe saw itself not as Europe, but a bunch of kingdoms that always fought. Now they came up with this thing called Christendom, where it's like, you know what? There's a bigger picture. There's a threat to all of us. And we sort of need to look at ourselves as a group. So they called it Christendom, or they called it Europe. Sort of like the 13 colonies in America did not get along. They'd tar and feather each other, chase each other out, but then they had to work together against the King of England. They saw this bigger picture called the United States. Hey, we got something that is in common with all of us, that's a bigger than all of us. And so just like the threat of King George III created the United States, the threat of Islam invading created the concept of Christendom or Europe. And so had we not had the Crusades, they would have bowled right through Eastern Europe and bowled right through Western Europe unopposed. So it sort of put – it gave Europe a couple centuries to get organized. And and actually the European crusaders learned how to fight from the Muslim crusaders. Right? So the Europeans originally where they were fighting on foot with heavy metal swords, and it was the Muslims that came in with their armored horses and their curved scimitar swords and their stirrups where they had control in the saddle. And the Europeans had to learn how to do that from the Muslims. And so it took 700 years to drive the Muslims out of Spain. It's the same thing that they tried to do in the Middle East. They tried to drive them out because it all used to be Christian. Syria was Christian for six centuries, evangelized by the Apostle Paul. The name Christian was first used in Syria. There's more Christian writing in the ancient Syrian language of Syriac than any other language other than Greek and Latin. And the Syrian Christians evangelized into India, Mongolia, even China in the sixth century. But it was all wiped out by the Muslims. And then North Africa used to be Christian. There were 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa, but they were all conquered by the Umayyad Muslims. They're crusaders. And St. Augustine of Hippo was from Carthage. Today that's Tunisia. But the Christians in North Africa had taught themselves separation of church and state. They called it piety. It was this thought, if you really become a Christian, you'll give away all your money and you'll live in a cave and be a hermit. Or you'll build a platform in the desert, climb on top, bake in the sun, thinking you're denying your flesh and getting holier. But it was all this me-focused salvation that abandoned any responsibility to a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So as a result, Islam was unopposed, conquering North Africa, conquering Spain, conquering Egypt. You know, Egypt was Christian for six centuries, evangelized by Mark, that wrote the gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Jerusalem had been Christian for three centuries since Constantine converted. His mom, St. Helena, went to Jerusalem, built all these cathedrals where they thought Christ's passion took place. So all the Middle East, all of North Africa was Christian. And the Muslim crusaders wiped it out in just a century. And then they're wiping out, controlling Spain, carrying away millions into slavery. And there were whole Catholic orders through the Middle Ages called the Trinitarians. The head of the order was called the Ransomer. And they would collect alms and donations and go under a white flag to get your friend back. As a matter of fact, the Muslims invaded Ireland, called the Stolen Village of Baltimore, Ireland, in the 1600s. They rounded up the whole town, put them on ships, took them to Morocco, sold them into slavery. And even one of the pilgrim ships. In 1625, the pilgrims had saved up 800 pounds of beaver skin and dried fish, and they sent it back to England. And a Turkish man of war captured the ship in the English Channel and took the ship and the crew to Morocco and sold them into slavery. And so anyway, the Crusades went on from basically from the year 1000 to, you know, or 1100 to 1300. It was just those two centuries. Richard the Lionheart led the Third Crusade. Left his brother King John in charge of England. Remember the Robin Hood stories, you know. And then St. Louis led the 7th and 8th Crusades. You know, St. Louis, Missouri is named after him. That's where I was born. And so this was this idea that the Muslims were the aggressors and the Europeans were just trying to save. And so the Byzantine emperor, Alexis Comnenus, he sent a message to the Pope saying, help us, they're invading. And so... again, it was a big humbling because the Greeks thought of themselves as the true Christians, and they viewed the Catholic West as the church split. And so Pope Urban II, he dedicates the church where St. Nicholas's bones were placed, and he's like, man, these Greeks are serious. They're sending over. It would be like us sending over George Washington's bones to Texas if, you know, Washington, D.C. was invaded. We'd like, you know, here, say, wow, this is serious. So Pope Urban II then goes to the Council of Clermont and begs these European kings to send help. He said, set aside your differences with the Greek Orthodox and come to their help. The Muslims are, you know, they would force them to extend their necks, and then they would, with a single stroke of a naked sword, they attempt to decapitate them. It's like, yeah, they do that today.
Let's stop right there. Let's go to break. We have one more segment. I'm talking with Bill Federer. He is a best-selling author, speaker, host of the American Minute that you can hear right here on KLZ 560. And so let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue on.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays. 'Cause no matter how far away you roam.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, wishing you a very blessed Thanksgiving with friends and family today. And thrilled to be talking with Bill Federer. He is a best-selling author, speaker, host of the American Minute right here on KLZ 560. And Bill, we're talking about kind of the history of the 16th century and then how the pilgrims escaped it. And you actually written a book. It's called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. So let's continue on. It sounds like it was pretty treacherous back then.
Right. And so the other part of it is in Europe, it was whatever the king believed, the kingdom had to believe. So let's look at England. England had a king named Henry VIII, and he broke from Rome, not because he had a spiritual experience like Martin Luther. He just wanted another wife. His wife, Catherine of Aragon, was the daughter of the king of Spain. She, after 18 years, didn't have a son. He decides to divorce her. The pope won't recognize the divorce, so Henry VIII decides to make himself his own pope. He starts the Church of England, puts himself on as the head, goes on to have six wives. Their fates were divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. So Henry was not a really nice guy to be married to. His advisors suggested if he's serious about breaking from Rome, he needs to stop using that Latin Bible. Get himself an English Bible. The German princes have Martin Luther's German Bible that helped them to break away. He needs an English Bible. So he does. He gets, he burnt William Tyndale to stake a few years earlier, but they basically take William Tyndale's work, redo it. They call it the Great Bible. Henry VIII spreads it in every church in England. It's called the Chained Bible because they chained it to the pulpits because it was so valuable. But the people got to rent time. This is the first time ever that the people in England could read the Bible, the common people, could read it in their own language. So he dusts his hands, the king, and he thinks, that's it. We did it. We broke from Rome. We got our English Bible. But something unexpected happened. People began to read it and began to compare what's in this Bible to this king divorcing and beheading his wives and claiming to be the head of Christ's church. And so a group starts that wants to purify the Church of England. They're nicknamed the Puritans.
Okay.
The king doesn't think he needs purifying, so he persecutes them. Another group said, it's beyond hope of purifying. We're going to separate ourselves. And they would meet in secret barns and basements by candlelight. We call them pilgrims. They flee to Holland. Interesting story. One group of separatist pilgrims sells all their property. They go down and buy a ticket on a boat. Well, before the boat takes off, the captain robs them, turns them over to the authorities, and they get put in jail. Another group of pilgrim separatists sell their property. They arrange for a Dutch ship to meet them on the shore. And the men are putting the stuff on the ship. The women are waiting with the kids on shore. Somebody snitched. The British come over the hill, capture the women and children. The Dutch captain says, well, I can't fight. And so he sails away with the men. You can imagine the wife saying, husband, get back there. For 2 years, they pass those women and children from one court in England to another. Finally, a judge says, well, you didn't do anything wrong. Go home. They go, no, we sold our homes. And so they put them on a ship, send them back to Holland. And so they're reunited with their husbands. Happy ending to that chapter. They're there for 12 years in Holland. They see their kids starting to become Dutch. And, you know, join in the Dutch military. And they go, you know what, we're going to assimilate and be and no more a movement. And then Spain threatens to attack Holland, which they do. It's an 80-year war of independence for Holland to break away from Spain. So the pilgrims say, you know, we need to move. They thought of going to Guyana, South America. They heard of the perpetual spring. But then they heard, well, gee, Spain will come, like in Jacksonville, Florida. There was a French Protestant settlement, and the Spaniards wiped it out. And so they said, okay, let's keep real far away from Spain. Let's go to this colony that was started 14 years earlier called Jamestown. It's Anglican. The king's in charge. But they thought, well, it's 3,000 miles away, and the king won't notice if we do our little pilgrim thing on the side. And so they get in a boat. It leaks. They got to go back. It leaks again. They got to go back. They switch it out for the Mayflower. Now they're sailing late in the year. It's stormy North Atlantic. 66 days, 3,000 miles. The 102 pilgrims are confined to the between deck, a little 4-foot-high space. It's not a cruise ship. I mean, it's tossing and turning. One dies, a baby's born. They get to America, and they're 500 miles away from Jamestown. You think, no big deal, just sail down the coast. Well, it's stormy. It's dangerous. And off the coast of Cape Cod, 3,000 ships have sunk because the sandbars go way, way out into the ocean. And so the captain almost sinks. They get back to Plymouth. He says, off the boat. It's too dangerous to do any more sailing. The pilgrims say, we got a question. Who's going to be in charge of us? The whole world's ruled by kings, you know, and we were going to go to Jamestown, submit to the king. They do something unique. They give themselves the authority to start a government. It's called the Mayflower Compact. We, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves together into a civil body politic to create just and, you know, suitable laws under which we promise all due submission. Simple, revolutionary. It was a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down rule by a king, it's we the people ruled from the bottom up. It's the difference between a dead pyramid and a living tree where every root and every little capillary root sucks in nutrients to help keep this thing alive. That's why we look back to the pilgrims as the model of self-government. Now, where did they get this idea? From their pastor, John Robinson. He was not a king-appointed Anglican pastor. He was a congregation. He's considered one of the founders of the Congregationalist Church. What's that? That's this church model where everybody in the congregation is involved, right? Taking the nursery and the daycare and the junior high and the, you know, their deacons, their, you know, and they're all involved in voting. And so everybody in the church, congregational church votes, and everybody in the little pilgrim community votes. And then that becomes a model for the other New England colonies. So that's why we look back to the pilgrims.
That is fascinating. Wow. So continue on. We've got about 5 minutes now, Bill.
Well, I have to tell the story of Squanto. So here you had the pilgrims were religious. They were good. Well, there's a lot of people that weren't good, right? Then there were Spanish, and there were the English and the Dutch and French would raid the Spanish ships. So they were like, you know, privateers and pirates. And so that morale bled over to some unscrupulous French and English going along the coast of America, luring some of the natives on and taking them to Spain and selling them into slavery. And so that happens to an Indian named Squanto. He's purchased by some monks. He's given his freedom. He hitchhikes his way across England, and then he gets to gets a job in England. He's working there for years. He learns the language. He learns everything. He finds another boat to drop him off in Newfoundland, and he's working for a fishing company there. And he's, you know, being an interpreter. Finally, gets a boat to drop him off in Massachusetts at Cape Cod, where he was kidnapped from, and only to find out that his entire tribe is dead. A plague had swept through, and a couple of years earlier, a French ship was shipwrecked at Cape Cod. The sailors got ashore. The Indians never left watching them and dogging them until they got the advantage, killed them all. But one of them must have had an illness, and the Indians caught it, wiped out the whole tribe. So Squanto, had he not been kidnapped, he most certainly would have died. But here he's, imagine how depressed he is. Now he's back, and everybody's gone. And so he's living with another tribe. It was that winter that the pilgrims land. They sort of providentially land at the one part on the eastern seacoast where it's uninhabited. Because the other Indians wouldn't take over that land. They thought some great spirit drove everyone out. So now it's the next spring. Half the pilgrims die the first winter. They would not have survived. And out of the woods comes Squanto. And here, you can just imagine the scene. He goes, oh, you guys from London? Yeah, I used to live there. You know, oh, yeah, you know, Wharf Street, St. Paul's Chapel. Well, yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I know. I was there. I used to. And here he is. Oh, this place? I grew up here. I know this place. Like over the hill, there's a spring. And William Bradford said he was a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation. He showed them how to catch fish, right? Salmon coming up the river. He taught them how to plant corn and take the corn and put it in a pot, shake it over a fire, and make popcorn. Taught the young men how to go down to the riverbank and squeegee in the mud with their feet and catch eels. William Bradford said, and never was there a man who saw a beaver skin until Squanto showed us how. And it took 40 years worth of beaver skins for the pilgrims to pay off the investors for their boat ride. And so just an amazing story that because of Squanto being their interpreter, it put them on good terms. And so the pilgrims did not experience the Indian attacks and hostilities that Jamestown did. And so this was the first Thanksgiving. So Squanto arranges for the Indians to come, and they bring their turkey and their deer. And then the pilgrims have their puddings and their cranberry sauce and so forth. And the first Thanksgiving, at the end of the day, the Indians roll up in their blankets, and they wake up the next day, and they're still there. So it goes on for a second day, and then the third day. And so the first Thanksgiving went on for 3 days. But it was just amazing. And now Squanto, a couple of years later, William Bradford says they're exploring in the bay. A freezing rain comes. It's stormy, windy. They put in at some island. And he said, here Squanto fell ill of Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose, which the Indians take for a symptom of death. He bequeathed several of his belongings to his English friends. And then he begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven.
Wow.
Well, the Englishman's God, these were the pilgrims. They were Christians. They were really strong Christians. And he says, I've seen your life. I want to go to your God. And I believe that they explained the gospel to him, and he got saved. But just a fascinating story that we look back to the pilgrims as the beginning of self-government, that instead of everybody obeying a king and his government and doing what you say or you're burnt to the stake, no, it's a bottom-up form of government where every citizen is participating. Where did they get the idea? From their congregational church model. Just a fascinating study of the pilgrims.
Well, Bill Federer, this is a great show to learn about what was going on in Europe and how we got to this point of self-governance. And I've heard the story of Squanto, but it's great to hear that again as well. So, Bill Federer, thank you so much. Wishing you and your family a very blessed Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. And again, all the information's in the book, The Treacherous World of the 16th Century, How the Pilgrims Escaped It. And if anyone's interested, my website is AmericanMinute.com.
Well, fantastic. So thank you so much, Bill Federer. And again, that is AmericanMinute.com. You have a blessed day.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
And today, this day of Thanksgiving, we wish you a very blessed time with your friends and your family. And we have so much to be grateful for in this country. And our quote for today is W.T. Perkeiser. He says, "It's not what we say about our blessings, but it's how we use them is the true measure of our Thanksgiving." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't serve.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.